Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Wednesday, December 21st, 2016. Happy solstice. It's now officially winter. This is the shortest day of the year, the day of the year with the least amount of daylight in the Northern Hemisphere. Now the days start getting longer. And there's good news for the environment. President Obama designated the bulk of the U.S.-owned waters in the Arctic Ocean and certain areas in the Atlantic Ocean as indefinite off limits to future oil and gas leasing. The White House announced the actions in conjunction with the government of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. It also placed a moratorium on new oil and gas leasing in its Arctic waters. The move helps put some finishing touches on President Obama's environmental legacy, while it also tests President-elect Donald Trump's promise to unleash the nation's untapped energy reserves. Obama is making use of an arcane provision in a 1953 law. That's to ban offshore leases in the waters permanently. The statute says the president of the U.S. may from time to time withdraw from disposition any of the unleased lands of the outer continental shelf. The White House said it is confident the president's directive will withstand legal challenge, and it said the language of the statute provides no language for subsequent presidents to unwithdraw waters from future lease sales.
This is a watershed moment for both the climate and for our oceans.
Miyoko Sakashita is Oceans Director and Senior Counsel with the Center for Biological Diversity.
It's just absolutely wonderful that President Obama has moved forward to permanently protect areas of the Arctic and the Atlantic from offshore drilling.
Environmental groups hope the ban, despite relying on executive powers, will be difficult for future presidents to reverse.
It's under a very specific provision of the law that is like designating a national monument. It could be a permanent protection. This is done under a specific provision of law that allows the permanent withdrawal of areas from the offshore oil and gas leasing program, making it very difficult for the president-elect to just unravel it.
The Atlantic waters placed off limits are 31 canyons stretching off the coast of New England south to Virginia. Environmental groups were calling for a permanent ban even before the presidential election, but Trump's victory provided greater urgency for them and for businesses that rely on tourism and fishing.
The Arctic is just a terrible place for offshore oil and gas drilling because of the extreme hazards. You get huge storms there, and the possibility of an oil spill is very significant and would be impossible to clean up. So there are a couple of reasons. One is that it's extremely hazardous. No one should be drilling in the Arctic in the first place. And then secondly, the Arctic Ocean and the communities that live there and the wildlife that lives there, like polar bears, are really on the front lines of climate change. So by withdrawing these areas from offshore oil and gas leasing, you're not only protecting all the wildlife from the, you know, hazards of an oil spill, but also keeping significant amount of greenhouse gases, you know, under the sea, and therefore forestalling climate change. This is really one of the most important things Obama can be doing to protect our climate.
Donald Trump has said he intends to use all available fuel reserves for energy self-sufficiency and that it's time to open up offshore drilling. Yesterday, people in lab coats protested in front of Trump's Washington, D.C. transition office. The protest was over the nominations of Oklahoma Attorney General and climate denier Scott Pruitt as EPA Administrator and ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. They staged a climate change clinic to provide the Trump administration with what they said is a much-needed lesson in science. A national day of action opposing what activists at 350.org say is a climate denier cabinet will target Senate offices on January 9th. A Gallup poll shows that Donald Trump's transition to power has received lower ratings than any of his predecessors. On Monday, Trump won the Electoral College, But another poll came out which said that he will enter the White House as the first president with a negative approval rating. Progressives say his pick for ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, would turn back the clock on a two-state solution. Friedman, who has a residence in Jerusalem, called supporters of the progressive Jewish advocacy group J Street worse than capos for supporting a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Capos were Jews in Nazi concentration camps who were put in charge of other Jews in captivity.
He's terrible. He's terrible for Israel. He's terrible for this country. He's terrible for the Palestinians. He's terrible.
Janet and Sandy are with the Progressive Jewish Congregation in Brooklyn.
His views are so far to the right, they're to the right of Netanyahu's views, and that's pretty far right. So he does not belong in believe in a two-state solution. He supports the settlements. He is just really terrible.
He supports settlements. He calls any Jew who doesn't support settlements an anti-Semite. And capos, he calls us capos. And guess what? He is going to help us organize the Jews of this country for a sensible, fair, decent position on Palestine.
Even J Street's going to have to come around.
J Street's definitely going to come around.
David Friedman is a bankruptcy lawyer. He believes Israel can annex and settle in the West Bank, and he wants to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. The women believe, as do many other progressive Jews, that Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, had a hand in this choice.
And his father. Kushner and his father and his whole family. And Trump also gave to support settlements. Trump's not a neophyte in this either. But Kushner is really a bad, very terrible influence when it comes to Israel and Judaism.
Friedman has raised billions of dollars to fund the West Bank Beit El settlement. Rather than trying to hold Israel accountable to international law, Friedman suggests that the U.S. should cut funding to the UN Human Rights Council. Hode Pink has a letter going to the U.S. Congress. It says members of the 116th U.S. Congress do not confirm David Friedman as U.S. ambassador to Israel. His appointment would be counter to efforts to achieve a peaceful solution to the Israeli Palestinian conflict. You can sign on by going to codepink.org. This evening, Jewish Voice for Peace chapters in 25 cities across the country will lead actions to protest Islamophobia and racism. Working with Muslim partners and other community organizations, the actions will take place in small towns and big cities, ranging from Kingston to Chicago. The action is themed around the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah. Organizers say the goal is to shine a light on commitments to fighting bigotry, discrimination, state violence, and to build community around fighting injustice in this new political era. In New York City, the event is going on right now. It just started at Union Square. And this is the news on WBAI in New York. Another appointment which worries activists is Tom Price for Secretary of Health and Human Services. Tom Price, the Georgia Republican, has been active in attempts to repeal Obamacare, slash federal funding to states for Medicaid and privatize Medicare. Activists gathered yesterday in front of Dan Donovan's office to push back against Trump's policies, which could endanger the welfare of New Yorkers. They are pressuring him to vote against any Republican plan to repeal Obamacare and cut Medicare funding. Jorge Quintero, member of Make the Road New York in Staten Island, said health care reform has had an enormous impact on my family and also on my community. I feel relieved knowing that my children have Medicaid. The protest in Staten Island is one of approximately 75 speakouts across the country as members of Congress return from Washington to their districts, this during this week's congressional recess.
You know, let's be honest about the moment we're in. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear about the potential loss of the Affordable Care Act. President-elect Trump has made very clear he intends to repeal it. Many in the Congress have said the same.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says there is a sign-up effort going on in New York because the more people sign up for the affordable health care program, the harder it will be to dismantle it. This as Donald Trump takes office. The goal of the campaign, Get Covered NYC, is to enroll 50,000 New Yorkers through 2017.
We as New Yorkers need to fight back. And right now, one of the best ways to fight back is to sign up the maximum number of people for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. And this is something that we're doing here in New York City, and it's something that people are doing all over the country as we speak, signing up the maximum number of people. First, of course, because we want everyone to get health insurance, and that's going to help them right now. And by any measure, that insurance is going to last for a meaningful amount of time, even as this fight over the future of ACA continues. But there's nothing more important than the facts on the ground. The more and more Americans that sign up for ACA, the harder it is to take it away.
Mary Bassett, New York City's health commissioner, says there are approximately 500,000 people in New York City who are eligible for health insurance but don't have it.
We also can make some estimates based on our survey work on what neighborhoods these individuals are in. And they are, not surprisingly, neighborhoods that are served by the 11 hospitals of our public hospital system, neighborhoods like Sunset Park, like Bushwick, like West Queens, like the South Bronx, neighborhoods in our city that are low-income neighborhoods are where we have an excess of people who are uninsured. And that's why this outreach effort that's not just dependent on a public media campaign, which is also ongoing, covers the subways and so on, but actually is reaching out to people with the boots on the ground, door to door, leafleting on sidewalks, is focusing on neighborhoods that are in the catchment areas of our public hospitals.
In New York City alone, since the Affordable Care Act came into play, 1.6 million New York City residents have signed up for health insurance. Nationwide, that's 40 million Americans who have signed up for Obamacare who previously had no coverage. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In less than 1 month, Donald Trump will take office as the nation's 45th president. Presidents-elect generally enjoy broad public support during their transition phase, but that hasn't been the case for Trump, with as many Americans disapproving of the way he's handling his transition as approving of it.
Yeah, I had a dream, and here's how it went. I dreamed that the Trumpster was the president. His little finger on the button, he was doing his thing. Our new national anthem was my ding-a-lang. We were bought and sold like in Monopoly. He had the most hotels in the land of the free. Locked up the opposition and the demonstrators too. That would be me and it might be. I had a dream, I'm not sure what it meant. When I dreamed Donald Trump was our president. And it wasn't even close, he won it in a landslide. Our new hot first lady, she was beaming with pride. If you think that's cool, don't fool yourself.
Loudon Wainwright with I Had a Dream. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. The FBI and the CIA have been claiming that Russia interfered in the presidential election to support Donald Trump. Intelligence officials say Moscow hacked Democratic emails in a bid to elevate Trump instead of what activists say was an insider leak showing collusion between the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign, as well as pay-for-play donations to the Clinton Foundation in return for foreign policy influence. It's a new red scare, says Alice Slater. She's on the coordinating committee of World Beyond War. She's with Abolition 2000 Network, and she represents the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation at the United Nations.
Well, I think this whole Russian thing is a red herring. I mean, it's like the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I hate to say I agree with Trump, but I mean, I think they're cooking this up. Because he wants to talk to Putin, and, you know, maybe they can put some kind of a stop on this U.S.-Russian competition that we have. You know, Hillary compared Putin to Hitler. And we promised Gorbachev when the wall came down that we would not expand NATO, and it's right up to their border now. We have troops on the Russian border. We took all those countries into NATO. And then, if they had troops in Canada or Mexico, we'd be going nuts. And when they had troops in Cuba, we almost had World War III. And Kennedy and Khrushchev agreed that the Russians would get their missiles out of Cuba, and we agreed to take our missiles out of Turkey. That was not announced, but it was part of the deal. And now our missiles are back in Turkey. We had a treaty with Russia, an anti-ballistic missile treaty, not to create these anti-missiles because we were in such a missile race. And we walked out of it. Bush walked out of it. Clinton started to walk out of it. Gorbachev offered Reagan, let's get rid of all the nuclear weapons. Reagan said, great idea. He says, but don't do Star Wars. And Reagan would not give up Star Wars. Putin asked Clinton to cut. I mean, now there's 16,000 nukes on the planet, and 15,000 of them are in the U.S. and Russia. And Putin said, let's cut our arsenals to 1,000 each and call everybody to the table to negotiate. He said that to Clinton. But don't put missiles in Poland and Romania. And Clinton would not agree to that. And we have a missile base now in Romania. We're building another one in Poland. So we have been very provocative. And as far as the cyber attack, we boasted when we attacked Iran's plutonium enrichment factory, the uranium enrichment. We and Israel attacked it, and we boasted about it publicly. You know, we talked about Stuxnet, this wonderful virus we had that, you know, put the kibosh on Iran's nuclear facilities. And at that point, Russia asked us, and China also, to negotiate a treaty to prevent cyber war, and we would not do that. We said we're not interested. This was in the New York Times when they were still reporting things. And that's another thing. China and Russia have proposed since 2008, they put a model treaty on the table at the UN Disarmament Committee in Geneva to prevent weapons in space. And in order to negotiate it, you need consensus. And the U.S. has blocked it. They blocked it in 2008, and they blocked it last year in 2015. So we're constantly provoking. We've got this military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about, and they're driving the arms race.
President Barack Obama is promising that the U.S. will retaliate against Russia for its suspected meddling in America's election process, an accusation the Kremlin has vehemently denied. Slater points to the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS. They are former CIA agents who work to expose faulty intelligence. It's led by peace activist Ray McGovern with Daniel Ellsberg and others. They believe Russia involvement in our election is a red herring. And Slater says it's good to talk to Russia. Anyway, she says, Clinton won. It's the Electoral College which interfered with the election.
We've got 1,500 nuclear weapons pointed at every Russian city, and they have them pointed at ours, ready to go in minutes, like 10 minutes. And it's not that anybody's really going to fire them, but there's been accidents. There's stuff, you know, it's like aging material. And Obama's leaving office with a pledge to spend $1 trillion over the next 30 years to refurbish the nuclear arsenal and the missiles and submarines and airplanes that deliver them. That's like ridiculous. We can't use nuclear weapons. I mean, that's not the kind of war we're in now. We're in a war for the climate and to end poverty. And I mean, if you really want to stop terrorism, we should stop selling them all the guns and the bullets that they're shooting us with, you know? I mean, it's really cockeyed. I don't think, I do not believe any of this. I think it's all red herring that Putin was interfering with our election.
Longtime activist, writer, speaker Alice Slater is on the coordinating committee of World Beyond War, and she represents the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation at the United Nations. In other news, four more people have been charged by Michigan's attorney general in the ongoing criminal investigation into the lead-tainted water crisis in Flint, Michigan. WBAI's Rebecca Miles has more.
Among those charged were two former state-appointed emergency managers, Darnell Early and Jerry Ambrose. State Attorney General Bill Schuette laid out the criminal charges involving conspiracy in a press conference.
Both Early and Ambrose are charged with three felonies. First, false pretenses and conspiracy, each carrying 20-year prison terms. Now, here are the quick facts. The city of Flint was under receivership and could not issue bonds or borrow money unless there was a fire or a flood or a calamity. That's the language of the statute. Early and Ambrose engaged in a plan to execute an administrative consent order. Think of it as a contract, which permitted the borrowing of tens of millions of dollars, possibly as much as $85 million. And this money was supposed to clean up a so-called environmental calamity, trying to get it into the statute, occurring at a lime sludge lagoon. Well, the money did not go to clean up the lime sludge lagoon because it had been substantially remediated. Instead, the tens of millions of dollars that they borrowed went towards building the KWA, the Karagandhi Water Authority. But here's the catch. Tucked in this administrative consent order, in this contract, was the requirement to use the Flint Water Treatment Plant for drinking water and other purposes for residents of Flint and businesses. This is in the public records. Read the administrative contract order. And you know the rest of the story. The big switch from the Detroit water system to the Flint water system occurred on April 25th, 2014. Rashes, poison of the water, failure to use an anti-corrosive, a phosphate, and it goes on and on and on. Now, Early and Ambrose are also charged with misconduct in office, a 5-year felony, and willful neglect of duty, a misdemeanor. Doherty Johnson and Howard Croft. Doherty Johnson and Howard Croft are former employees of the city of Flint. Both Johnson and Croft participated and were part of this effort to borrow money under the pretense of cleaning up the lime sludge lagoon. Both Johnson and Croft are charged with the crime of false pretenses and conspiracy to commit false pretenses. Again, both of these crimes are 20-year felonies.
Flint's water system became contaminated with lead because water from the Flint River wasn't treated for corrosion for 18 months starting April 2014. The water ate away at a protective coating inside old pipes and faucets, releasing lead. During the crisis, 12 people died from Legionnaire's disease and young children were exposed to dangerous levels of lead. Schuette said through the investigation it was very evident that there was a fixation on finances and balance sheets and that fixation cost lives. It came at the expense of protecting the health and safety of Flint, and it was overall about numbers over people and money over health. Darnell Early, one of the accused, went on to become emergency manager for Detroit's public schools before being fired there after run-ins with the teachers' union and inaccurate state reports about the work he was doing. Early and Ambrose are also named defendants in a class action suit filed by residents of Flint over the contamination. Also charged on Tuesday were two former Flint City employees, Howard Croft and Doherty Johnson, for participating in the conspiracy, who also face felony charges with 20 20-year sentences. Schuette said that 9 people so far have been charged from the investigation that started in mid-January this year. Some of the cases will go to trial and some people have sought plea deals. The chief investigator, Andrew Arena, said, "What were they thinking? Why would they do this? The plant was not ready to go and they knew it. The investigation is ongoing." Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, December 21st, 2016. The news was produced with Rebecca Miles and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York. And we'll go out with a holiday carol from the Nasty Women's Choir of New York City. This in reaction to President-elect Donald Trump and cabinet picks who would seek to turn back the clock on women's rights.
Have yourself a nasty little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our government will be alt-right. Have yourself a right to contraception. Let the gays be gay. From now on, our troubles will be here to stay. Here we are as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful whites who are dear to Trump, gather near to Trump once more. Someday soon a woman will be president, if the fates allow. Until then we'll have to muddle through somehow.